I know that I hurt you.
Yeah.
I was a child trying to be a man.
To all my sons worldwide. All my juniors. I apologize for my absence. I know I left you without a name to drop. I don't know how I expected you to get your clout up and get your money up, but don't worry. Daddy's home.
And I know I missed so much of your life.
Turn me up.
All right, welcome everybody to season 3, episode 10 of the LarshCast. Rare back-to-back weeks for the boys this season. Looks like we're getting some momentum going here and extra momentum because we have a new member joining the LarshCast team here. We've got him on the call today. We've had him on the show as a guest before too. He's a multinational singer and songwriter talent. You may have seen him at the Canucks games rocking some national anthems. We got Juggy Bajwa joining the team here, and he's on with us today to discuss some Canucks, lifelong Canucks fan. How you doing, Juggy?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on with you guys. Proud to be a member of the LarshCast. I've known Tedge for quite a while, and obviously...
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. And it's obviously great talking to you again as well, Ryan. I know, I think the last time we spoke was when I was on 650 there for that
interview. Right.
Great to join you guys. Great to talk some Canucks. Get some music here, music in there, here and there. So,
well, we should, I was saying, we should start off the show with the national anthem, right? So, yeah, take it away, Juggy.
On the spot. Yeah, you know, we do have to do though at some point is we'll have to do a collab or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'll slap down some guitar and bass, and you can give me a vocal.
Oh, nice! Like I didn't even realize you played some guitar and bass. That's sick, man.
I'm more a punk rock guy, so it's pretty similar genres. People would say we're interchangeable, you and I.
I have one question.
When I look at genres, I always kind of think about that music is more than a genre. You know, I think that you can always experiment with different genres and mold it into your own style. You know, so if someone tells me that they play punk rock, I'm like, so what, right? Like, you know, we can always mold it in and make it sound good with whatever music you're trying to do.
LarshCast music coming, baby.
Absolutely. So, Juggy, I want to ask you, I mean, first of all, thank you. Well, welcome to the LarshCast. Happy to have you.
Thanks so much.
Very excited to talk Canucks hockey with you, you know, and I want to hear your insights. Of course, we all do. But for everybody that's listening, I also wanted to mention, Juggy was born blind. He had retinoblastoma at a young age, and so both his eyes. He's you've seen him on TV wearing sunglasses. In case you didn't know why, it's because he's blind in both eyes. But all that aside, Juggy, I heard some criticism, or I know you interacted with individuals who were critiquing how long, drawn out your anthems were, and I wanted to hear your opinion on the national anthem and adding a little bit more of that twist to it, where you perform a bit more than that obedient type of patriotic, just sing the words, you know? So how do you feel about that when it comes to the national anthem?
Well, I think you're putting me on the spot here, man.
Jeez, yeah. I was going to say hit heavy.
I liked what you said to those individuals when you were talking to them on Twitter. So I kind of wanted to hear
I appreciate that.
Reiterate those thoughts.
You know what? Yeah. I think, you know, in this industry that we're in, whether, you know, we can tie this even back to the Canucks, right? With, you know, the criticism that the players have gotten, or, you know, and including myself in terms of me being a part of the Canucks in some way as well. So, but the thing is that, I think everyone, you know, has the right to have an opinion and, you know, some of that feedback is always positive. And so for me, you know, when I first did the anthems and to see the amazing response and, you know, the people really enjoying it, I think that's what matters to me more. And obviously what also matters to me is those who do give feedback too. And, you know, sometimes it works and that feedback can apply to you and sometimes it doesn't apply to you. Right. Mm-hmm. It kind of just really depends on how you, choose to interpret that feedback. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think, you know, just for me, I think the anthem, especially, you know, the American and Canadian national anthems. You know, we, a lot of the times we sing it the way it's, you know, just as it's written. And for me, I think when I sing the anthem, I always try to bring some flair into it to, mm-hmm. to be like, oh, this is Juggy. And I know Marie and I, and many, there's a lot of people, a lot of talented people here that will do that.
Yeah.
You know, where they'll come up on stage and sing the anthem in terms of how they feel it from their heart. And, yeah. And I think for me personally, you know, when I sing it from how I feel, like, you know, when I sing the Canadian national anthem, for example, I feel this source of pride from being mm-hmm. from this diversified country. And mm-hmm. and, you know, for me to add some sort of flair, it almost kind of sounds Indian in a way too, you know. it just kind of adds a bit more of that sort of like, this is where I am, and this is and I'm proud to represent my country, but I'm also proud to represent my culture that I come from.
That's very well said.
And,
yeah,
you know, and I think I think at the end of the day, you know, people won't like everything that you do.
I mean, that's
the nature of the industry that you're in too, right? With especially I mean, anything you do in life, but in the entertainment industry.
Absolutely. Very well said.
You know what? Everyone has critics. You'd be shocked to hear that some people don't actually like TJ. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe. But
That's the first that I've heard of this, actually.
Nonsense.
Well, he's going to chirp me. I got to chirp back Nav, you know. So wow. Nav's like on tweets here and there sometimes. Today he was such a giddy little child. Oh, my tweets are blowing up. Oh my God, I'm so popular on Twitter.
Maybe.
What did he post? I missed it.
Like, he had a Garland tweet, which was a good tweet. You know, it got me like 400 likes, and Nav was probably smiling all day because of that.
Listen. Maybe I should start tweeting videos of my, you know, when we're playing hockey, you know, from your beer league and say, hey, I got a penalty doing this, and that would work out real well.
We're getting off the playground.
Let's talk Canucks.
Yeah, we're just talking. Let's talk Canucks.
This is like the Horvat JT Miller rumors right here.
Getting out of control, man.
It's all playing out on the large cast, eh?
So before we get into that, because we do want to talk about all these trade rumors and some stuff is heated up quite a bit in the last few days since we had our last podcast. It's really blown up. But I just want to talk about and get your guys' thoughts on this road trip. I know on the last episode we talked about whether the Canucks were going to make the playoffs. They had an opportunity going into last night's game to take 7 of 8 points, really, really cement this team as a potential contender. And once again, they've slipped up in what I would argue is a winnable game. And unfortunately, at the same time, Demko looked human. So we haven't heard much from Nav here. Let's go around the horn. Start with Nav. What are your thoughts on this road trip, and where is this team at, and what has it done to your playoff hopes for this group moving forward?
I feel like, was it the 8 or 9 games after Bruce was hired where we just went on that run? I mean, we're winning games. We're down 3-0, coming back, winning games, and I think that gave the fan base some confidence. But the last 13 games since then, I think this is more reality of what the Canucks are. Let's be honest. Vancouver didn't play a horrible game last night. Nope. Demko, like you said, looked human. But what does that tell you? Demko can't look human. Demko can't let in a bad goal. Nashville's a good team. Did not play that great last night. Nashville was average at best. But you know what? Unless the Canucks are playing unbelievably well, or unless Demko's standing on their head, that's going to be the norm for this team. Defensively, I've tweeted it. I know TJ making fun of the tweets. They're not good enough. They got 3 NHL defensemen on this team, guys. They do. They got, you know, we got Hughes, who's awesome. We got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who offensively hasn't done that well. But, you know, he scored a great goal last night. But besides that, solid. He's been pretty subpar. But defensively, he's been actually above and beyond what we could have imagined. He's been great.
Yeah.
Tyler Myers on a good team is a 5th defenseman. He's played well this year, but he's a 5th defenseman.
Left okay, I'm going to stop and you right finish. There.
Let's cue up some of the stuff from last year. I love this.
What I'm saying is...
5th defenseman?
He's a 5th defenseman on a good team making $6 million. He's played great this year. I'm not gonna crap on his ability this year because he's played
2 years in a row. He's been playing great. Don't forget last year. Unfortunately, the best defenseman on the team.
There's 3 defensemen on this team that are NHL caliber. The other 3 are not NHL caliber. One of them, Hamonic, for some reason or the other, who have defended all year, just refuses to play. So I'm not sure what the hell's going on over there, right? But they're not good enough. They are not good enough. And it shows when they're playing a decent team to above average team, no matter how well they play, everything has to go right for them to win. And one thing goes wrong, they lose. And that's what we saw on this road trip.
Okay, so hold on. I'm going to respond to that before you go on, Ryan. You're talking about this team, you know, they are what they are. But you know what the reality is when they were coached by Travis Green, they were like a 300-something team. And when they're being coached by Bruce Boudreau, they're just shy of a 700 team. So they're call them a 600-plus team.
That's the first eight games. That's the first eight games.
No, overall, right now, they're just shy of 700 hockey under Bruce Boudreau. And they played the toughest road trip after a COVID break and missing all their players against the best teams in the league. And they look good against Florida, look good against Tampa. They could have got some extra points out of that trip. And now you're talking about the Nashville comparison. They played Nashville on that road trip when Nashville was on a back-to-back. And Nashville had, you know, the schedule loss term, whatever you want to call it. And the Canucks beat them. And then now the Canucks are on a back-to-back and Nashville beat us. But we were in this game for quite a while. And obviously, yeah, Demko did. He looked human. So you want to make a real comparison to like one of the top teams in the league. Yeah, we're not an elite team, but we're also not a bottom tier team. We're not even in the bottom. I'd say we're above the half, like the mark, that the 16th, 17th kind of mark of the league. I'd say we're above that. We're not a playoff team because we're not there yet, but we could be a playoff team. If we had Boudreau from the beginning of the year, we would be in a playoff position right now. I guarantee that.
So we're the Flames for like how the Calgary Flames were for 10 years. Or two.
And what did Calgary do? They changed their coach. And look at them now. Last year, they were crap. Look at them
their
now.
Their defense is better than our defense.
Oh, yeah. You're saying a coach can make
way
a change,
better
right?
than our defense.
I heard a saying about – well, go ahead, Chuck. Okay, you go first.
Yeah. So just to respond to you guys with a couple of points as well. So, I mean, in terms of the road trip, I actually thought we played decently well. But now there's just no margin for error.
Yep.
You know, when the team started off the way they did, and you know, unfortunately it led to firings, obviously. I mean, understandably so, but you just hate to see people get fired, especially mid-season. You know, having to turn that around, it had to happen. But you know, just going back to the road trip, they did have a chance to get 7 out of 8 points. They did take a 1-0 lead, but at the same time, I just think that to what Nav said, I would say that if Boudreau was here from the beginning, I think the complexion would have been different. Like, let's say if they started with a 7 or 8 game win streak plus played 500 hockey right now, I don't think we would have been concerned, because that's basically what they're at right now, is the 500 sort of over their past few games. And so, you know, I actually think that I would say that, you know, in terms of the NHL quality defenseman, I would say that Tyler Myers probably, you know, at $3 million or $4 million bucks, we'd probably have in a different conversation about. I think a lot of it just comes down to the contractual, you know, ramifications and all that. But you know, I do think overall the road trip was pretty positive. You know, just based on how the team played. But I think what the team is really lacking right now is that finishing touch, right? And a lot of that is actually coming from you know, guys that are used to scoring, and that we're seeing that we've been used to see scoring these big time goals, like Pettersson, who's had a very down year, unfortunately. You know, I think, you know, just kind of looking back in hindsight, and obviously we'll talk about that more, but I just think that, you know, the injury, the start to training camp and all of that, I think it just really, just missing the start of that really kind of impeded his progress into the season. But I mean, it's still many games in now where you're kind of, you know, questioning what is Pettersson and where he's at right now. So I think that's a huge, and that's what I kind of came out of the road trip with, is like, you know, there was a partial breakdown in one of the, I think it was the second period where they took a 4-2 lead and Pettersson had a partial break. And this kind of happened in Tampa too, where he had a couple breakaways, just couldn't score. So there's just that finishing element is missing. And, you know, I think that,
well, let's touch on that though, Juggy, because that though you raised a couple of good points, and Pettersson is one. And Ryan, who, I mean, you know, you want.
I was just going to say, let's just reset this conversation here, because Juggy, you set it up perfectly in terms of where the key component of struggle is, and it came up on the broadcast last night. Yeah, okay, this team is 12-4-4 since Boudreau. For comparison, they were 8 15-2 under Travis Green. So there's definitely improvement. So there's definitely improvement. And I get what TJ's saying here, but the concern to me is, again, the scoring. And the bulk of that record came at the beginning with that new coach bump win streak. Theoretically, to make the playoffs, they're going to need to maintain a pace of 700 average in terms of a win percentage to move forward. So let's talk about those struggles, because Besser, Petey, Miller, Garland all struggled greatly. Bo is struggling greatly. So, is this just a situation of Boudreaux letting them play in the first seven games and then the system is now catching up with them? TJ, I'll go to you first here. What are your thoughts on what is the result of that scoring trouble? Is this just what the team is? Because I think they should be more offensively minded. We've discussed before.
I think it all comes down to a loss of momentum. Like, we had so much momentum after the coaching change, and you can attribute a lot of that to the coaching, like the Boudreaux bump or whatever you want to call it. But the fact of the matter is, when you go on a 3-week break after winning seven games, and then you come back and you have the toughest stretch of hockey on your schedule to play after a 3-week break, and you're missing four key players every game. Momentum is what killed this comeback drive that we had. And I don't think it's over necessarily yet, because now the Canucks are going to play the most home games for the rest of the season for any team in the NHL.
Six of the next seven, point, actually.
From now until the end of the year, the Canucks are going to have the most home games in the NHL.
Yeah.
And that could, again, create another layer or level of momentum for the team to get rolling again. And we had the toughest stretch of our schedule behind us now. So I think a lot of the scoring woes was just attributed to the lack of the chemistry. Players in and out of the lineup, you can't practice together, you don't have a consistent line game to game, everything's being mixed and matched. And this is what the issue with Travis Green when we had healthy players. But for Boudreaux, it's because we had players missing. And so I do think the Canucks are going to get hotter again and start winning more games than they lose down the stretch. But is it going to be enough? Like you said, 700 hockey, we had such a hole to climb. And I want to touch on what Junkie was mentioning about the lack of scoring. I'm just going to throw this out, and I want to hear Nav, because Nav's probably going to disagree. But at this point in time, I do think Brock Besser's a good hockey player, but I don't think he's a part of the core anymore.
You want me to comment on that?
So yeah. It's very interesting that you say that. And sorry, I didn't realize Nav was.
No, go ahead, Jody. That is a statement to make, and I believe it.
Go ahead.
It's very interesting that, you bring up that point, because I remember a while ago, and Andrew Walker, who's a polarizing broadcaster in the market at the time, I actually enjoyed his honesty and his
me too.
Even though I don't agree with all the takes all the time. But one of the things he did say back then was, what if Brock Besser is not a core piece moving forward? And there was a lot of debate about what he said. But it's kind of something to really think about right now, where this team is at. And obviously we'll be getting into the deadline stuff, but I just wanted to respond to that. The COVID thing has definitely, and it hasn't all happened at once, right? Like, if you even take Calgary, for example, like, they got all their COVID cases, or most of them, around the time where most of the games were canceled, and then everyone came back, and now they have their full complement of players without, any injuries. And also, like, now they can play without having to worry about, okay, who's going to come out, who's going to come in out of the, and it kind of takes all the momentum out of the game.
Absolutely.
Before you even play, because you don't even know if you're going to be able to play. And so all of those things, but yeah, I mean, this is definitely quite a hole,
take it back to that. What I just said is I think it's a hot take, but I think a lot more people are starting to believe this hot take. I want to hear what Nav thinks. Is Besser still a part of this core?
If you asked me a year ago, we've had these conversations on multiple episodes, multiple shows, and I'm like, you can't trade Brock Besser. I don't know anymore. Yep. I don't know anymore, because you know what? Maybe after a while, when you see somebody, he's good for about 3 months, that's something. Like, it's not just Brock Besser, guys. Bo Horvat, you look at these guys. Perhaps.
Thank you.
they're good for 10 games. They'll go, here we go. Brock Besser's back. Bo Horvat's back. Bo Horvat has 10 assists this year. I think Tanner Pearson has more assists. We crap on Tanner Pearson all the time. Tanner Pearson.
You crap on him.
I do. But Tanner Pearson has more assists as a winger than Bo Horvat does as a center.
Yeah.
Like, as a center, you should be getting – and he, how many faceoffs did Bo Horvat win? He's good at faceoffs. But is he a true second-line center? Is Brock Besser a true second-line or top six forward? I'm not sure anymore.
So you're saying – you're taking what I said further. You're saying Bo and Besser are no longer part of the core.
To me, it's like we look at these guys. For me, if you're an elite player – and this was tweeted already, I think, by Rob Fay was tweeting out. If you're elite, you're elite. You know, for a long period of time, you're elite for 9 out of 10 games. Being elite for 2 games out of 10 games, that's not elite. That's considered an average, middle of the park player. Brock Besser, I've said it for years. I don't understand, why does he play in that stupid beauty league, whatever the hell he does. I mean, for whatever reason, he needs to work on TJ. You know what he needs to work on is what you tell me to work on
skating
all the time in beauty league.
Skating.
If you to me, TJ always says this to me, and TJ's a great player. I'll be honest. I'll say it right now. I got great stick handling.
Can we cut that clip right there just to play it?
Yeah. No, but listen, it's like Brock Besser. If I was getting paid $6 million, I would work on my skating.
Yeah.
I would get faster. I'm not getting paid for this guy's livelihood. Depends on this. Him or what's his name? Pettersson are very average to below average skaters. If you can't get there, you're not going to be able to score. Brock Besser looks like a 45-year-old man out there. I think Tom Brady.
That's true, though.
Tom Brady can skate faster.
Tom
Brady can get a first down quicker than Brock Besser can get from blue line to blue line.
He can get one quicker about running it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's.
It really kind of goes for me. It kind of really goes back to what does this management team identify, or who do they identify as the core going forward? You know, I think they probably identify Hughes and Demko, and then who do they add on to that? Or is everyone else, you know, considered trade bait and all of that? The question going forward is, and like you guys just brought up, you know, Horvat's had, I'm trying to remember, in the 2019-2020 season, he had, I think, close to 70 points, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be off on that. Maybe we need to,
he's having a down year, for sure.
That. But he did have close to like 60 points, which is borderline, you know, second line production. So now it really depends how much further can that continue? Is that where he maxes out? Is he more a 40 or 50 point player? Where his bests are at? And I think the other thing we also have to keep in mind is maybe we just have all the same types or kinds of skaters, right? Like you kind of see what Rutherford did in Pittsburgh, right? How he reshaped the Pittsburgh Penguins by adding in a lot of speed, and a lot of that came from their homegrown guys, which again is something I'm really excited to hear about in terms of how they sort of homegrown development path takes shape with this new management group, in terms of, you know, getting guys like, you know, hidden guys like Gensels or Sherry's of the world, or, you know, wherever they decide to go with that.
And it's such a good point, Juggy, and you kind of nailed something that I had actually listed on one of our topics to discuss, and it kind of came up organically here. So you mentioned Hughes and Demko. In my mind, those are the only two players on our roster that are considered core players, which is a huge departure from even 6 months ago talking about this team. I think you would have had 5 or 6 potential players as
core players. Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, for sure. So there's been a huge shift in, you know, I mean, last year, my dad, for example, never trade Elias Pettersson. This year, maybe we need to be looking at it. You know what I mean? Like, and that's coming up from everybody right now. So,
but what kind of value are you getting for Petey right now?
And that's right? The like question.
Petey's not going anywhere.
This goes back
to the Besser situation we were talking about last episode.
He's not like, enough.
You're trading a guy who's struggling right now, but you're trading his potential, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're trading away. You're trading the fact that it's still Pettersson. Yeah. He's 23. He can still be the elite number one center. He was elite a couple of years ago. And you look at Nathan MacKinnon as an example of a player that he could still become, you know, not Nathan MacKinnon, but he can still get out of this funk and be who he was meant to be. And for Besser, it's the same thing. Like, you're trading his potential away. He could still be a 30-goal scorer.
These guys aren't playing well enough to be traded away for what?
No, exactly. Unless a team bites on that potential. And with Besser,
fair enough. If somebody thinks Besser's their guy, like the Phil Kessel to their Sidney Crosby and Malkin, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. Fair enough.
But I tell you, if you want to trade with
Kessel, though, he had seasons of 30, almost 40 goals. And he was proven goal scorer.
Yeah.
He was a proven goal scorer where if he was put in the right situation, which he was, right? Like Bonino, Hagelin, Kessel. I mean, what a line that was, right? Like he wasn't even playing with Malkin or Crosby most of the time.
But Johnny, jumping on that point, sorry to interrupt there, but exactly what you said. What happened there is people realized when Phil Kessel was in Toronto, he couldn't perform. He was still scoring goals, but he wasn't that star top line player. But when he went to Pittsburgh, he became what he should have been. He was like the complimentary star behind Crosby and Malkin. Brock Besser is already that. He's not the main guy. You got Pettersson ahead of him. He's JT Miller ahead of him. You got Quinn Hughes ahead of him, right? He's already in that complimentary role, so he can't even succeed in that. Like, he's been playing like crap. Let's be honest. Like, Petey's getting a lot of hate. A lot of people are down on Petey. Brock Besser's got very little hate this year.
Yeah.
He's kind of going under the radar. He's Brock Besser's done. He's done nothing. I mean, he's got
we're going to change all that.
Has he done anything? I mean, he hasn't done. To me, I've kind of soured on Brock Besser. And jumping on Ryan's original point of who's untouchable, there's only two untouchables on this team. Is you don't touch them no matter what.
Hughes and Demko.
Hughes and Demko in that order.
Add Boudreaux. Add Boudreaux.
So then,
Bruce, there it is. No.
Now, let me flip this back on you then. So Miller, Garland, Horvat.
Okay, Ryan, let me ask this because I was going to go there and I have a specific way.
Go ahead. Yep,
I want to specifically ask this one. And this is a perfect segue question, I think. So who would you rather trade, okay, for the same package if you get it? It's hypothetical, but listen.
Okay.
Horvat and Besser or Miller and Garland?
Ooh.
Would you rather trade Horvat and Besser or would you rather trade Miller and Garland?
I would trade Horvat and Besser. You know
exactly.
Why?
Yeah.
You know why? Because their contracts are coming up. Both their contracts are coming up. Garland is signed for under $5 million for 5 years. That's a steal.
And Miller's the guy who's a little older, but still valuable.
But what he brings to the table
for
what he's getting paid is a lot higher in value than what Brock Besser's brought to the table for what he's going to get paid.
Ryan, you agree
too? I totally don't. And
Juggy, do you agree?
Because here's why before Juggy.
Yeah, Juggy, go after Ryan. Go after Ryan.
Versatility, right? Like, where's Besser playing other than his one position? What else is he bringing to the table? It's not like he's going to kill a bunch of penalties effectively or do anything like that. Like Miller and Garland are versatile plug and play players. I don't think there's any way you could value those two less.
Juggy?
I don't know. What do you think, Juggy?
Yeah. You know what? As much as I really like Brock Besser and Horvat, like they're great people. And I haven't had a chance to meet them personally, but man, like I know they've done a lot for this team and Horvat's always fought for this team. But yeah, I mean, that's as sad as it is to say, right? Because, you know, even with the only way I see them trading a guy like Garland is because here's the thing, a guy like Garland on your team, he's going to really, you know, tick off the other people on the opposition. And we need players like that. We need more Garlands.
He's a poor man's Marchand.
So when that starts to happen, when you really start to think about it, then it kind of gets to the only way they trade Garland for me anyways is if they get this unbelievable package or they feel like this team isn't going to be contending in the next 3 to 4 years, which
that's exactly the reason why you would maybe consider keeping the younger guys, but Garland's the one of the younger guys, Miller's the older guy. But my beef here is why are we considering trading Garland and Miller when we should try to move out the guys who I don't think you can really win anymore with Besser. Horvat, you know, he had a good run against St. Louis. But like, what else in the playoffs? You know, and what is he doing?
They only made the playoffs one time.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, in that playoff run, what else did Horvat really? He had that one, like one good series, and then he kind of disappeared against Vegas. And you look at Besser, like, does anybody think he's going to take another step? Do we really want to be building again, like rebuilding with Horvat, Besser, and Petey leading the charge? Like, you got guys like Miller and Garland that are true. Like point per game almost, or you know, not Garland, but Miller is a point per game all-star elite player. like physical. He can win a hockey game on like taking the team on his back. Garland is the biggest shit disturber on the team.
Okay, yeah.
How many times will we say we want a guy like Marchand? Guy like Marchand. It's Connor Garland.
I like Miller, but when you go elite, he's a very, very, very good player, but he's not elite, man. He has some deficiencies too. He takes boneheaded penalties.
Semantics, though.
He makes stupid
passes sometimes.
He's got a bad giveaway. Like to be honest, on this team, he's a center. Realistically, it would be much better if the team was better that he'd be a winger because he's not a great center. He makes mistakes defensively.
Yeah.
Right.
So but now, can I ask you?
That's the thing, right? It's like who's going to take your face-offs. And you know that's why they decide to keep Horvat too. Is like they need somebody to take their face-offs. In terms of Miller, you know, it's interesting because I actually there's a case in point, right? You know, for trading JT Miller or not trading JT Miller. You know, it kind of really comes down to whether they say to Millsy like, hey, if we let you go right now, we might be able to bring you back a year from now. When we're going to contend and we'll get some assets back or whatever. Sometimes it works and rarely
does work. I don't think I've ever seen that.
But. So Johnny,
the thing is though, is that, you know, what did we just talk about? Right. The defense has been in terms of preventing goals and our goals against I think it's pretty high up there.
We're near the top of the league.
Yeah. So, but what are we missing? We're missing mobile puck. Like that's the thing with Boudreaux, right? He'll make even guys who play serviceable minutes in the NHL look very good. You know, like even like a Brad Hunt has played recently, decently.
You'd mentioned that Jackie was watching yesterday in Shorthouse. I had to laugh because I mean, what is Bruce supposed to do? They're like, oh, in the last 2 minutes, like, oh, they got Hunt out there with a Quinn because, you know, he's an offensive-minded defenseman. I looked at the stats. He's got like 5 points and that's 5 assists. I'm like, oh, God, this is
just it, right? Yeah. And so what is it that we need? We need a mobile puck mover. We need a couple of them, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's through homegrown development, you know, I think they probably have some high hopes on Jack Rathbone. And, you know, a Jet Wu as well. Let's see what happens there. I think Rathbone's, you know, quite promising, especially for next year to make the jump. But again, like who's the other puck mover? Who's the other puck mover that we have that's mobile that can make passes, right? Because a lot of the times I think where the lack of scoring and why it's happening, according to me anyways, is because a lot of the times where the defense is throwing up these passes, it's like the forwards have to chase after the puck a lot of the time, right? They're not tape to tape passes. They're not like tape to tape and the forwards skating in, right? It's more like, okay, I'm going to try and pass this to you. You go chase after it and see what you can do. And then you kind of spend a lot of energy trying to do that and battle other guys. And then they make these home run passes and it's in the back of your net.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I mean, that is the big thing the Canucks are missing right now is somebody to effectively distribute the puck on a regular basis. Hughes can do it. OEL can do it. But I just want to take the conversation back to kind of a different angle on the way TJ posed the question for who to keep and who to leave. I think this is a pretty slam dunk question, but I just want to get your guys' sense of it because I'm curious. Do you think that there's any way they would trade both Miller and Horvat? It would have to be a center coming back. In my mind, they have to keep one or the other. Is that
if they're doing that they have to get a center back that's at least equal to one of them, and maybe it's Miller because he's trading an older guy for a younger center. Maybe like, but I don't know. That you don't do that. You don't center depth one. Is so like crucial to success in this league, and so I don't know.
And even if they did do that, it'd probably be the offseason, to be honest, because I don't see a lot of teams right now turning over their because that's quite a turnover, right? If you're making such a huge trade in the middle of the season, unless or until it's, you know, like the Arizona Coyotes where you're getting the Chikrin and like, you know, like all those, you know, and probably like Clayton Keller or somebody, right? But, you know, like that's where we're at right now. And so, personally, like if we get the right package for Miller, like I kind of look like at a guy like Braden Schneider plus a Nils Lundqvist even who could really help us in the future, especially I would look at maybe trades like that.
Do they trade both of them? No way. I think Realistically, they're going to trade. It's going to be, they will trade like a Miller type and a Besser type or a Garland type. You know, they kind of, they're different two guys like Miller and Besser and Garland and Horvat. You can't trade Miller and Horvat, and you can't trade Garland and Besser. You know, you can't trade these guys because they relatively, they're supposed to do the same thing. I mean, yeah. Even though, again, Besser hasn't been playing great, I wouldn't trade Garland. I when I saw that, was it by Elliot Friedman last week when he tweeted that, I was like, are you kidding me? Miller, I can see contracts coming up. And I know TJ's mentioning, probably wants to talk about it, the $7 million. I'll tell you right now, that $7 million is not in Canada. If he wants to
that's
got to
be an American team.
That's an American $7 million where the taxes are less and it's, you know,
like he's Florida there. Or Tampa or something. Yeah.
In Vancouver, if he's in a re-sign in Vancouver, which I'm not sure about. And let me, I guarantee you, Jim's had this conversation with JT. He's had this conversation with his agent.
Yeah.
Kind of see, like, hey, is JT willing to sign a long-term contract with us? And I wouldn't be surprised if JT Miller is traded here at the deadline or realistically in the offseason. It will be because either JT Miller says straight up, no, I'm not going to resign, or he doesn't give him a straight answer. JT, here's a good thing about the leadership the Canucks have now, especially with Jimbo there, the new Jimbo that we have. This guy has experience. He's been in hockey his whole life. He's managed his whole life. He knows he's not going to, he's not going to lose assets for nothing. He's not going to let Miller go into the final year of his contract without either the contract done or without him being traded for assets, like Juggy said, something that we need. And you know what? Correct. Let's be honest. Can this team win right now with JT Miller on this team with the makeup? They can't because they don't have a defense. So you're going to have to trade somebody good to get somebody good. And unfortunately, Benning has put us in this situation where our defense is so subpar that we're going to have to give up a JT Miller or a Bo Horvat or a Garland. Fans are not going to like it, but they're going to have to do it if they want this team to succeed for not 1 year, not 2 years, but for multiple years.
So here's the thing when it comes back to the defense, right? For me, like, you know, we've been defending in terms of, you know, the top 5-on-5 play and all of that, which is a good sign in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you know, it kind of gets back to, I wouldn't say our defense is terrible. You know, we've seen worse defense actually, you know, like remember early in Matthews and Marner career where they had Zaitsev and on their top four, they had Marenshin and they still ended up winning games because Matthews and Marner, you know, would win games, right? They would score and they would get them into the playoffs. And then we all kind of know what happens from there, but, but like, you know, it just kind of gets back to that point of where is this team going? What does Alvin and Rutherford, what do they see? Like, what does that whole team sort of see in terms of how to, because we also have to think about the long-term future of this team. Right. And I think especially now with the way the season has gone, like, I don't think we have to blow it up. I will say though, I think if anything, they'll probably give whoever they decide the core group is like, and I think Pedersen's a part of that right now. They'll probably give it like 2 or 3 years max to see what this core can do before they might be like, all right, maybe we have to tear this down. There's no way they're tearing it down right now.
I don't know. Yeah. I think they're going to give it 3 weeks and then make that decision what to do. I think that Jim Rutherford is not the type of person to be patient, but we were being patient with this core as it is. We were waiting for them to take the next step, and we couldn't do it under Travis Green. And maybe he wants to see if it was Boudreau or Green. Was it coaching? Yeah. I don't think Jim Rutherford is the type of guy to be patient here. No. I think he's going to make a decision to tear it down right now. And if he does, goodbye Garland, Miller, maybe even a Besser, and all these prospects, like, you know, Lafreniere and Schneider, you know, whoever else coming in.
I don't know. When you say blow it up, I don't know he's going to blow it up, but I will say this in the offseason for sure. This team's going to look very different next year. Ooh. Unless they go on this magical run somehow, make the playoffs, make some noise. Unless they do that, which right now is not looking too great, this team coming into next year is going to look very different. Jim Rutherford did not come here to rebuild this team and be good in 10 years. Jim Rutherford's a 72-year-old man, right? He came here because he probably saw, okay, we got some pieces. I got the intelligence to friggin' move things around a little bit to perhaps be a good team in a couple of years from now, maybe next year a little bit better. But listen, am I saying this team's going to look how they look right now to compete next year? Heck no. But personally, I'm not sure how you guys feel. If that means missing the playoffs this year, if that means losing a Pedersen, Garland, Miller, whoever, if that means we're going to become a team that's going to become a contender every single year, to be in the playoffs to compete for a cup. I'm ready for that. I'm 38 years old. I'm sick of this. Like, oh, we're good for 2 years. Even in 2011, everyone talks about 2011. They were good for about 2 to 3 years, and then they went on that big cup run, right? They were a good team. They weren't great. Look at Boston. As much as we hate them, they've been good for 10 years. Chicago was good for 10 years. I want that for this city.
Nav, let me ask you, though. 10 years. When did you say your prime ended? At what age?
My prime for what? What was I trying to do?
Just in general. When did your prime body, prime. Your prime drinking, you know, when you can recover real quick and all that. What age?
Probably about two days after I got married.
You know? Interesting. Yeah.
But you listen, my prime is a lot different than a professional athlete's prime. We just had Tom Brady retire at, 44, and he probably could have played to 50.
Amazing.
And
be a lot more
productive than anybody on this pod would be, right?
Some have said he's the JT Miller of the NFL, actually, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was TJ.
It might have been, yeah. So I know we're up against the clock here, guys. I just want to do a quick around the horn recap, just to see. Let's put our thoughts out into the ether here. What we think is going to happen in the interim here. I'll start quickly. We'll go to TJ, Nav, and then Juggy, and then we'll close this thing down and hopefully be back with you guys next week. But in terms of next moves, as far as I'm concerned, I think the JT Miller move needs to happen sooner than later, just to inject some new life into this team, maybe get some new prospects. Something needs a shakeup. So as far as I'm concerned, something needs to happen sooner than later, whether it's at the end of this 3-week period. I don't like the idea of waiting until the off season. That's my prediction. I don't know what you guys think. TJ, you go ahead. We'll do a quick recap and then shut this thing down.
I think you wait a few more weeks to see if this team can get on another run. Can they get hot again with all their players back? They're going to, you know, the road trips are done. The hard part of their schedule is done. You know, having that many home games, it's a blessing. It's a blessing, especially nowadays in this pandemic and all this crap. I mean, the restrictions are they've hinted at them ending, but either way, I think if this team gets on a run in the next few weeks, you wait until that exact moment around the deadline where you see what you have. Are you in the playoffs? Are you in the hunt? Or are you still fighting to get back into that hunt? And if you're still fighting or you're no longer fighting, you make the move. You don't wait. Inject some new life. Let's see what these new players do. You know, reinvigorate the fan base. Make a splash, which gets people talking about the team, and you go from there. That's what I think.
I think the Canucks will continue to do what they've been doing for the last month here. They'll win a few. They'll lose a couple. They're going to stay in the playoff run. They're going to stay in the playoff race, sorry. They will not make the playoffs, unfortunately, because the beginning of the season was so poor. They will miss the playoffs probably from within like 8 or 9 points. They'll probably miss the playoffs. The games in hand will come and bite them in the butt. They won't
make
call
that the classic Canuck.
Classic Canuck. Classic Calgary back in the 2000s, right?
So true.
Too good to be bad, too bad to be good. They won't make the playoffs. They won't make the JT Miller or any massive trade during the deadline. They'll do that in the offseason. My guess is JT Miller will be traded because he will probably give him the idea that he's not going to resign here long-term. At the deadline, they'll probably make some moves. I can see Luke Shen moving. I can see even Hamonic getting traded, perhaps to Calgary, you know, because he's still close to home with his daughter and stuff. They'll make some minor deals, probably for some draft picks, maybe some depth in the farm, but nothing major will happen this year. Jimbo's going to wait and do it in the offseason when I think there's going to be more value for JT Miller or even a Garland or a Brock Besser.
Yeah, so I actually agree with a lot of that. I mean, we're always in the hunt because we got Brad Hunt. Terrible pun of the day.
Good grief.
But
this is the last episode for Juggy.
At least I'm not the only one with terrible puns now. Keep it coming, Juggy, because I'm alone on an island usually.
That's so true. Ryan's got some of the cringiest freaking puns. And he did them on air, like with 10,000 people listening. Like,
I
5,000 more than the Arizona Coyotes are going to have playing, right?
Oh, there you go. Oh, there you go.
I think trading Petey right now, to me, you know, I think they have to give it another year with Petey. I think it would be a massive mistake trading him right now. I would agree that I think a lot of the stuff that we're going to see, a lot of the sort of big trades, big acquisitions will probably happen in the off season. We've been surprised before, and it is Trader Jim after all. So we'll kind of have to see where that goes. I think, you know, in terms of JT Miller, I actually think if they were going to trade him, I think the trade deadline would probably be the best, just in you know, the contenders who will be asking for his services will get two playoff runs with him instead of the one. So I think you're actually going to get more value for him at the trade deadline than you will in the offseason. And that's something they're going to have to decide. And like Ted said, you know, the it really starts with these home games coming up here and seeing where the team is at and where they can get to, if they can stay in the playoff hunt or if they falter here. And this will be really telling in terms of, you know, because I know there's a lot of players probably here right now that are uncertain about the future. So, you know, I'm sure we're probably going to get a lot of, you know, good efforts, you know, and see what players really think of playing for this team.
Right, Ryan, before you take us home, I wanted to say one thing about the PD situation where Juggy said you have to give him another year. Another thing you have to do for PD is what they did for McKinnon after his down years. He went to a sports psychologist. I don't know if PD's seeing one now or not.
Good call.
But that's what Nathan McKinnon did. He went and talked to a sports psychologist, and he came back better than ever. And I don't think they've talked about or mentioned it, or I don't know if it's under wraps.
That's such a good point.
But that's what PD needs. He needs a sports psychologist more than anybody.
Fleury's done it. There's many players that have gone through that too, like McKinnon, Fleury, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how the player meetings go with the players, what kind of programs this organization will implement in terms of, you know, their summer or off-season workouts too.
Well, good thing is he's going to get $7 million next year, so he can afford a good one. Suck it up, man. Like, you know why?
Come on, Nav.
No, I believe in all that mental health 100%. You know, we've talked about that 100%. But let's be honest. He's going to put an effort on his skating. He's going to get better on the ice. I think it's more between you know, we always say it's between your ears. Dude, pick up your game. Get off Instagram in the offseason and, you know, try harder. You know, fix something. I'm sick of it. $7 million.
Remember you and COVID fatigue and everything you were talking about and how drained you got. You sitting at home, working at home or whatever, PD's a professional high-paid athlete in the spotlight. Everybody's talking about him.
You got to travel. I haven't been on plane travel, 3 years, all right? You got to travel. You got to Vegas. If I got paid $7 million a year, my fatigue for COVID would be slightly a little bit.
Take us home before I
start. Yeah, I was going to say, I think what we have here
I'm going to go get a sports psychology therapist right now.
I think we're all going to be seeing a therapist after this one. Once again, guys, you've been with the LarshCast, Ryan for Tej, Nav, and new member Juggy Bajwa. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you guys again soon.
Thank you guys for having me.